Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, May 10th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Chevron VP, Oil Prices Range Bound. Current markets are signaling the need for more energy supply, writer Booth says. By Mella McEwen, staff writer. Market fundamentals are expected to keep oil prices trading in a narrow range. Current markets are signaling the need for more energy supply, writer Booth, vice president, Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit, told members of the Permian Basin Chapter, Energy Workforce and Technology Council, Tuesday. But, he said, we're in a bit of a tug of war. He cited high inflation and rising interest rates that are undercutting oil demand, while, at the same time, the world is seeing spare oil production capacity at the lower end of the range. That could bring about some price volatility if demand picks up, say, from China, where economic activity has been increasing after COVID restrictions were eased, faster than demand. That could keep us range-bound on prices going forward, he said. For all the talk of ending fossil fuel use, Booth pointed out that when the COVID-19 pandemic took hold in 2020, the world ground to a complete halt. Yet crude demand fell from 100 million barrels a day to 85 million barrels a day and averaged 90 million barrels a day for the year. That's a 10% drop. What we do is so essential to the world that the world ground to a halt and still used 90 million barrels of oil a day. Forecasts call for significant growth in energy demand, including for fossil fuels like crude oil, natural gas, and coal, he continued. The challenge will be to provide crude and natural gas with the lowest possible carbon content. An industry that can figure out how to drill wells into miles of ocean and operate production equipment located on the sea floor can figure out how to provide low or net zero carbon energy, he said. The Permian Basin will be a significant area for energy investment and energy development, he said. An estimated $26 trillion is needed in global oil and gas investment between 2021 and 2050. Of that, 30% will be needed in North America, and of that 30%, 7.5% will be needed in the Permian Basin. Permian Basin production is forecast to reach 7 million barrels a day before it reaches a plateau, comprising 60 to 65% of Lower 48 production before 2040. Booth praised the service companies that are part of the council and their collaboration with producers and with each other for driving improvement in operating efficiency and environmental impact. Collaboration will be needed, Booth told the gathering. It will be needed to improve efficiencies, which will make the whole value chain work. Collaboration will be needed in safety. Safety is one area we have to come together on, he said, citing statistics from the Permian Road Safety Coalition that found 277 oil field-related traffic fatalities in the Permian Basin in 2022. An 18.88% increase. Collaboration is needed in sustainability, whether it's producing lower carbon fuels or water use, he said. Chevron has a three-pronged approach to water use. Minimize the use of fresh water through partnerships with service companies. Maximize use of recycled produced water, also in partnership with service companies, and beneficial reuse. Expanding beneficial reuse, whether it's turning treated produced water into gray water for use in road construction, or using treated produced water in non-food agriculture, will require partnerships between companies, with regulators, and with legislators, he said. Collaboration is also needed in advocating for the industry. He advised building relationships, quote, with those who agree with us and those who maybe don't agree with us. We need to build a foundation so we can build those relationships, unquote, he said. Deal with facts in order to be credible, and look for common ground, he said. And in 5, 10, 15 years, that will pay dividends. We're starting to get invited to the table. We're starting to be part of the conversations, he said. He reminded his audience, the world needs energy. The world needs prosperity. Energy leads to prosperity. This article is entitled, County Leaders OK Tax Abatement for Bass Pro Shops Developer, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The Midland County Commissioner's Court approved a 10-year property tax abatement for C. Hodges Development Services, the developer of Bass Pro Shops, on Monday. The Commissioner's Court tabled a 7-year sales tax abatement to be discussed at their next meeting. Sarah Harris of the Midland Development Corporation, which has been assisting Hodges Development in bringing Bass Pro Shops and an adjacent entertainment venue to Midland, told the county commissioners that the city council has approved both the 10-year property abatement and a sales tax abatement. County Attorney Russell Malm said the county has never approved a sales tax abatement. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey echoed his previous stance regarding property tax abatements, saying the business or entity being granted the tax break must be transformational and generational. You get a Toyota manufacturing plant in Midland County, that's transformational, that's generational, he said. Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez said he believes the proposed Bass Pro Shops can be transformational. Charles Hodges, the developer of the new store, said it will generate approximately $28 million in sales, as well as personal property benefits. These are self-generated revenue, Hodges said. This is self-generated sales tax. If we don't build, we don't generate anything. We don't get anything back. If we don't sell, we don't generate sales tax. Hodges said the complex in Northwest Midland will have entertainment opportunities expected to generate an additional $12 to $18 million in revenue. The action item to grant Hodges Development a 10-year property tax abatement passed 4-1. This article is entitled, Developer: Main Entrances Off State Highway 191, Not 158, by Stuart Doreen. Charles Hodges of Hodges Development Services said the main entrances to Bass Pro Shops and an entertainment complex to be built in Northwest Midland will be located off State Highway 191. Hodges and city officials were peppered Monday night at a forum at Scarborough Elementary about the potential traffic issues the complex could bring to the area. Hodges, however, said main entrances will be located off 191 and not State Highway 158, and that drivers from Midland and Odessa, quote, will not be incentivized, unquote, to turn on to State Highway 158 when coming to or leaving the development. He also said that street work leading up to the development, like Sinclair and Kirkland Streets, will come into the yet-to-be-built Bass Pro Shop and the entertainment center directly. They won't need to go up and process through the light at 158, Hodges said. Hodges provided information about the much-anticipated development that will be located west of Grasslands Estates. The Bass Pro Shops, he said, will be 65,000 square feet, upgraded from 50,000, and is expected to bring in $28 million in sales. He said the master plan calls for the development to be located on 17 acres. The entertainment facility will include an outdoor stage area which will face the northwest to keep noise from the residential area to the east. Other information provided included that the Bass Pro Shops will have 115 employees, making an average salary of $53,000. The workers, he said, are expected to be more mature workers who will be able to take the time needed to explain what the merchandise is, if required. He said no decisions are final about the entertainment complex or restaurant that also will be located at the development. He said the restaurant is likely to be a higher performer in Lubbock. "You will have to try them all to find out," Hodges joked. The meeting, organized by District 4 Councilwoman Amy Stretcher Burks, quickly became an opportunity for West Midlanders to express worries about the development and issues happening around the area. Numerous complaints were registered about water, or the lack of currently available at all times, in the neighborhoods west of Loop 250, north and south of State Highway 191. The noise from traffic along State Highway 191, 158, Loop 250, and the neighboring Scarborough Sports Complex. The speed of vehicles traveling State Highway 158 and through the Grassland Estates. And the fear of more engine braking happening in the area. Officials with the city stated that lights placed on 158 should help slow down traffic. After the meeting, Hodges talked about the property tax abatement, the sales tax rebates, and $5 million in the Midland Development Corporation funding Hodges Development would receive for the project, including infrastructure. He said it will help with the rising costs of construction and the increased interest rates impacting the cost of doing business. "I've had multiple projects shelved in the last 3 weeks, just because of these interest rate changes," Hodges said. "Everything is really stacked up against building new construction in America, and whether it's multifamily or whether it's anything else, when your interest rate hits the strata that they've hit now, you're on the tipping point of affordability. And you're talking to a mom-and-pop retailer who's going to be paying close to $50 a square foot because of these construction costs. They have got to come down so that we can keep our local retailers in business, and it may take a while for that to happen." This article is entitled "Horseshoe Operator's Attorney Responds to Johnson County" by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. An attorney representing Horseshoe Hospitality sent a letter Tuesday to County Judge Terry Johnson and Midland County that could be a precursor to legal action. During the May 8th meeting of the Midland County Commissioners Court, Johnson was one of three votes to terminate the contract between the county and Horseshoe Hospitality Services. During the meeting, when Joe Kelly, owner and president of Horseshoe Hospitality, asked Johnson the reason for the termination, Johnson said, quote, "I don't need one," unquote. According to a letter sent from Hal Brockett Jr. of the law firm Brockett, McNeil & Poxick, the county was not permitted to immediately terminate without cause. The firm stated in the letter that county representatives have communicated directly with Horseshoe Hospitality Services employees to discuss the contract. The firm added that communication by the county's representatives to Horseshoe Hospitality's employees pertaining to the contract constitutes improper interference with the Horseshoe's business operations. The firm demanded the county cease all such communications. The letter states that the immediate cancellation of the contract puts the livelihood of the Horseshoe's 13 employees at risk and will possibly cause cancellations or postponements of upcoming events at the facility. The Horseshoe website shows the University of Texas Permian Basin will hold its spring commencement at the Horseshoe Pavilion this weekend. If Horseshoe events were to be canceled, according to the letter, it would tarnish the Horseshoe's reputation and in turn damage the county's reputation. Additionally, the alcohol licenses issued by the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission are non-transferable, and if the contract is terminated, alcoholic beverages cannot be sold at the facility until the licenses are obtained again, the letter states. The contract has less than 17 months left on its 60-month term. The letter states, instead of going through stressful and expensive litigation, Kelly is willing to meet with Johnson and the county to try to find an amicable solution and honor the contract for its remaining approximate 17 months. This article is entitled Norman Opposes Drilling Inside Midland by Stuart Doreen. Midland City Council member John Norman said Tuesday he will no longer vote for requests to drill for oil inside the city of Midland. The representative of District 2 said voting for drilling has been sitting on my conscience because of the seismic activity taking place inside and around Midland. EarthquakeTrack.com reported 189 earthquakes taking place near Midland in the past 365 days in areas including around Midland, Gardendale, Stanton, and La Mesa. The site also showed three quakes with magnitudes less than 2.0 happening between 3.1 and 13.6 miles of Midland in the last 7 days. Since we have been drilling over there at Air Park, we've had seismic activity in my home, Norman told the Reporter Telegram. I live up there on the east side of town, and my parents live over there as well. Norman becomes the first elected official in Midland to publicly state his opposition to drilling inside the city limits. Norman said he knows people have differences of opinions on this issue. He also said that based on his experience in oil and gas over the years, and his father's experience in the industry, that the drilling and seismic activity is connected. In February, following a pair of earthquakes near Midland and Mentone that were among the strongest in the state's history, the Railroad Commission issued a notice to oil and gas operators that it is adding requirements for new disposal well permits in the Permian Basin. The requirements are designed to assist the agency and industry in monitoring and responding to injection and reservoir conditions that may be conducive to induced seismicity. Coincidentally, city leaders were briefed Tuesday that the city expects to spend more than $10 million this fiscal year from its Parks Special Purpose Fund, which is made of revenues collected by the city from money that comes from drilling taking place under city parks. The city of Midland expects more than $22 million in that fund at the end of the fiscal year. I know we are an oil and gas city and that we bring in a lot of revenue, Norman said. But at the end of the day, I just feel like people are important. If we're going to continue doing what we're doing, eventually it's going to be something that I don't want to have happen, and it might be catastrophic. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, May 10th. Craig Winborn, April 16th, 1942 to May 2nd, 2023. This is the story of Craig Winborn. Craig Virek Winborn was a man of drive, generosity, and joy. He will forever have a place in our hearts and minds for the happiness he brought to this world. Our big daddy, age of 81, passed away peacefully at his home in the arms of his loved ones on Tuesday, May 2nd. Greg was born on April 16, 1942, to Bill and Rosamond Winborn in Yorktown, Texas, and spent his childhood in Pampa, Texas. He is survived by his brother, Coyle Winborn, three children, Becky Fletcher, Patrice Blanchard, Jamie Svoboda, four grandchildren, and one great-grandson. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, May 12th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell will be officiating. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Hugh Daniel Dan O'Neill. Funeral Mass for Hugh Daniel Dan O'Neill, 67, of Midland, will be held on Saturday, May 13th at 10 in the morning at St. Anne's Catholic Church, followed by a reception. The interment will take place at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Dan passed away on Wednesday, May 3rd, surrounded by loved ones following a brief illness. Dan was born November 16, 1955, at Midland Memorial Hospital to James A. and Wilma Lee Billy O'Neill, the sixth of their eight children and their first native Texan. Dan's greatest pride and joy was his family. Dan is survived by his wife, Debbie O'Neill, Nee Gentry of Midland, and his three children, Ryan Elder of Converse, Jennifer Sell Taylor of Midland, and Maggie O'Neill of Austin. Affectionately known as Grand Dan to his grandchildren, he will be greatly missed by his granddaughters Kennedy and Carolyn and grandson Griffin. Dan is survived by his siblings Mary Beth O'Neill of Dallas, Kathleen O'Neill Smith of Dallas, Laura Sue Hoover, Sid of Seattle, Jim O'Neill, Jackie of Fort Collins, Colorado, Bill O'Neill, Anne Marie of Coppell, and Peggy Howard Neal of Katy, as well as his Aunt Detta O'Neill Kretschmar, and many nieces and nephews and cousins. Dan was preceded in death by his sister Sally Ann Bowles and his parents Billy and Jimmy. In lieu of flowers, please consider becoming an organ donor, organdonor.gov, or donating in Dan's memory to Hospice of Midland or your favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jesse Sandy Ruth Coleman, September 18, 1927 to May 5, 2023. Former Odessan Jesse Ruth Sandy Coleman, 95, passed away on Friday, May 5th in Dallas. Sandy was born Jesse Ruth Sanderson to Lola Maggie and Jimmy Sanderson in Martindale, Texas, on September 18th, 1927. Sandy is preceded in death by her parents, sister Joyce Kahn, and husband Bob Coleman. She is survived by her daughter Cindy Mullins, son Robert Andrew Coleman Jr., and wife Vicky, as well as four grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. A graveside service will be held on Saturday, May 13th at 1 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Cece Young Senior Living in Dallas, where Sandy spent her final years. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Leo F. Grace. Leo F. Grace of Midland died on Monday, May 1st in Arlington. On May 3rd, he would have been 98 years old. He was born one of six on May 3rd, 1925, on a farm 5 miles east of Selden, Kansas. He married Pauline M. Pauls on May 23, 1950, in a triple wedding in Selden, Kansas. Leo was preceded in death by his parents, five brothers, and granddaughter Casey Billington. He is survived by his 8 children, 20 grandchildren, 31 great-grandchildren, and 7 great-great-grandchildren. The family will receive friends Thursday, May 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Rosary will follow the visitation. Funeral services will be at 11:30 a.m. Friday, May 12th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, followed by interment at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Leslie Ray Fine. Leslie Ray Fine passed away Sunday, May 7th at Midland Memorial Hospital, surrounded by his family. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, May 11th at the Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Leslie was born on November 8, 1940, in Muleshoe, Texas, to Malchus and Floris Fine. Les is preceded in death by his wife Teresa, his parents Malchus and Floris Fine, brother Edward Fine, and brother-in-law Larry Dupler. Les is survived by his son Kevin Fine of Austin, daughter Janice Woods and husband Roscoe of Socorro, New Mexico, granddaughter Kaylin Woods of Socorro, New Mexico, sister Shirley Dupler of Granbury, Texas. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Roland Tony Moreland. Roland Tony Moreland passed into the arms of his Lord Jesus Christ, surrounded by family, on May 6th. He was 72. Roland was born in Midland in 1951. He was the eldest son of Clark and Betty Moreland. A gathering of family and friends will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, May 11th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. A memorial service will take place 2 p.m. Friday, May 12th at the First Baptist Church Chapel. Memorials in lieu of flowers may be made to the Midland Soup Kitchen, care of Jason and Nancy Ivy, or to Midland Meals on Wheels. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Valerie Marie DeWoody. Valerie Marie DeWoody passed away on May 6th, just 2 weeks after her 18th birthday. Her loss has left a huge hole in the hearts of many. Marie will be missed by her parents, James Andrew DeWoody and Issa Dawn DeWoody, née Dean, her sisters Taylor Dawn DeWoody and Audrey Hope DeWoody, her grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins. Marie was born with a rare chromosomal disorder, ring 14. This disorder did not make her life easy, and it brought her time with us to a close all too soon. But it did not define her. A public visitation will be held on Thursday, May 11th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. The funeral service will take place on Friday, May 12th, at 10:30 a.m. in the Golf Course Road Church of Christ Family Center. In lieu of flowers, donations are preferred at ring14usa.org and or bynumschool.org. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Susan Vasquez. Susan Jeanette Risk Vasquez, age 74, of Midland, went to be with the Lord May 6th. Family will be receiving friends Thursday, May 11th, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Services will be held on Friday, May 12th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine at 10 a.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Victoria Ramirez. Victoria Lynn Ramirez, 69, of Midland, passed away on Friday, May 5th. Viewing will be Saturday, May 13th, from 9:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Saturday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com.
Texas Tribune event focuses on water by Bob Campbell. The sorest and most important subject in West Texas, water, was the topic of a noon Tuesday panel discussion of UTPB's College of Engineering Resources and Facilities building, where the painful outage that left 160,000 Odessans without water for 48 hours in mid-June last year got special attention. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett, one of the panelists at the Texas Tribune-sponsored event, said the outage was not unique in the fact that we saw a leak because we see those all the time. In the past 2 years, we've had over 90, Fawcett said. What was unique was that we were not able to quarantine the leak because the valve was not functioning. Had we quarantined the leak, we would have been fine. We had to flush the system and put water back into it to make sure folks could safely bathe. The situation was cumbersome and it really challenged us. It was a county-wide problem. Odessa was without water for several days last June when a 24-inch water line sprung a leak at 42nd and San Jacinto Streets. Crews could not immediately isolate and repair the leak because a 69-year-old valve was faulty. The city of Odessa was forced to shut down the water plant, and most of the city went without water for several days. Some parts of the city were under a boil notice during that week until the plant was flushed and the valve was repaired. Tuesday's event was held under the auspices of the Texas Water and Energy Institute, which is housed in UTPB's engineering building. The discussion was on broken pipes, how we can keep water flowing safely in West Texas. About 40 people attended the event that was also streamed online. Fawcett said one cheering aspect of the emergency was the tremendous amount of support that we got from the public. We had bottled water stations throughout the county, and in no case was there a lack of hydration, he said. It could have been much worse. The event, with a videotaped interview of Zavala Public Works Director Tom Bailey by Tribune Regional Editor Nick Garcia, with Bailey viewing problems with aged infrastructure and sparse funding in his small Rio Grande Valley town. Carlos Rubenstein, an Austin-based consultant who is a former chairman of the Texas Water Development Board and on environmental quality, said he became well-versed in water issues as a native of the Rio Grande Valley, where unscrupulous land speculators in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s developed irrigation districts and rudimentary subdivisions called colonias that lacked roads and basic water infrastructure. Rubenstein said conditions have been greatly improved in the valley since it has become the fastest growing area of the state, but more advances must be made. He said statewide planning is good, but there has been less progress in putting those plans into effect. We're not great at implementing projects yet, but we're getting better, Rubenstein said. The other speakers were Dr. Melanie Barnes, a senior research associate at the Texas Tech University Department of Geosciences in Lubbock, and Oscar Martinez, manager of grants and strategic initiatives for the city of El Paso. Odessa man found not guilty Tuesday by Kim Smith, May 10th, 2023. An Odessa man accused of sexually assaulting an 11-year-old girl nearly 5 years ago was found not guilty Tuesday. Daniel Anthony Chavez, 39, faced two counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child in the 161st Ector County District Court. The alleged victim told jurors Monday Chavez came into her room early on the morning of November 20, 2018, shortly after her little sister fell out of bed and put her back into bottom bunk of the bed they shared. Her sister took up the entire bed, so she curled up on the floor with a blanket, she said. Sometime later, she said Chavez came back and digitally penetrated her and performed oral sex on her. She testified her mother came into the room moments later and confronted Chavez, at which point he partially pulled up her pajama bottoms and ran to the bathroom to wash his face and hands. The girl testified Chavez later begged her not to tell authorities what had happened. On Tuesday, prosecutors Courtney Williams and Ricky Ernest showed jurors the taped interview of Chavez conducted by then Ector County Sheriff's Office investigator Donald Albrooks and rested their case. Defense attorney Luis Chavez then opened his case by putting his client on the stand. Danielle Chavez testified that a few hours after the children in the home went to bed that night, he took a shower and brushed his teeth. Then he noticed both the girls were asleep on the floor. Assuming the young one had fallen out of bed, he pulled the blanket the girls shared back and placed her back in the bed. He then went back into the bathroom to put his socks on and noticed he had toothpaste on his chin. The defendant testified he lathered up his hands and washed the toothpaste off his face. While he was coming out of the bathroom, Daniel Chavez said, he was confronted by the girl's mother, who was already on the telephone with 911. It was only then that he looked into the girl's bedroom and realized the older girl was partially exposed. Danielle Chavez told his attorney he thinks the girl's mother jumped to conclusions because of events in her past and testified there had been a lot of tension in the home leading up to that night. He also testified he had no idea what the alleged victim had been doing while he was in the bathroom washing his face, but she'd been covered up in the blanket when he'd move her sister to the bed. Earlier in the trial, Luis Chavez's co-counsel, Anthony Chavez, had asked a licensed professional counselor about when adolescents begin exploring their sexuality. The defendant also refuted the girl's testimony about their conversation that night. He testified he only told her to tell the truth because he could go to jail if she didn't. During cross-examination from Williams, Daniel Chavez acknowledged he was pretty buzzed from alcohol that night, but said being intoxicated doesn't lead him to do things he normally wouldn't do. He then had to acknowledge he's been arrested twice for driving while intoxicated. The defendant also acknowledged his testimony about the girl's pajama bottoms was inconsistent. He testified he doesn't know how they came to ride low on the girl's body, but he told Albrooks they must have come off when he moved the blanket to put the younger girl back in bed. Williams also questioned Daniel Chavez about the sequence of events. She reminded him both the girl and the mother testified. The mother confronted him as he exited the bedroom, but he testified she confronted him as he came out of the bathroom. How did she know you had just come from the kids' bedroom if she confronted you in the bathroom? Williams asked. Williams then took the defendant through many of the details of that night that were provided by the girl and asked him if they were true. He acknowledged every one of them was true up until the point where she said he sexually assaulted her. He said he would never do something like that. Daniel Chavez testified. Jurors also learned Tuesday there was no DNA evidence linking the defendant to the girl. However, sexual assault nurse examiner Tella Whitley testified she didn't expect to find any given the acts allegedly performed by Daniel Chavez. Judge Justin Lowe is presiding over the trial. MC student leader seeks to eliminate healthcare barriers by Odessa American on May 9, 2023. Special from Midland College. Midland, Maria Gonzalez admits that she wasn't the best student in high school, and it wasn't until her senior year in high school that she discovered a purpose to her life. Now she will graduate from Midland College MC with an associate degree and has set her sights on becoming a physician, hoping to eventually establish a practice in West Texas. Gonzalez will be a keynote speaker at the Midland College graduation ceremony, scheduled at 7 p.m. Friday, May 12th, at the AIG Langford Chaparral Center on the MC main campus. I'll transfer to Texas Tech University in the fall, Gonzalez explained. My goal is to then attend medical school and become a physician. Right now, I'm thinking that I will stay in West Texas area and serve those in the Hispanic community. I understand and want to overcome the barriers of language and culture that exist between physicians and Hispanic patients. When she was five, Gonzalez and her parents immigrated to the United States from Colombia and established residency in Las Vegas, Nevada, where her father worked in the construction business. In 2012, when Maria was nine, the family moved to Midland, and Maria attended schools at Midland ISD and graduated from Midland High School in 2021. During my senior year in high school, I took certified nurse aide and phlebotomy courses at Midland College Advanced Technology Center through the MC-MISD College and Careers Academy, Gonzalez said. That's when I found out that I really enjoyed healthcare. However, I've noticed how many people in the Hispanic community are hesitant to seek healthcare, and when they do, there's often miscommunication. I truly believe that I can help alleviate these problems, and the best way I can do that is through becoming a physician. Gonzalez is no stranger to hard work. She started at the age of 15 at Opal's Table and continued to work approximately 25 hours per week throughout high school. At the age of 16, she had earned enough money to purchase a car. This semester, she is working part-time as a Midland College science tutor, and she volunteers at Centers for Children and Families at least once a month, monitoring visits between non-custodial parents and their children. In addition to being an honored student at Midland College, Gonzalez is also vice president of service with the MC chapter of Phi Theta Kappa, PTK, Honor Society. She takes this responsibility very seriously. During the fall of 2022 semester, Gonzalez organized a campus-wide project to provide items for clients of the Crisis Center of West Texas. After discussing with fellow PTK members and looking at the dismal numbers concerning domestic violence in the area, she led the chapter in collecting personal care items from the campus community. The project began on October 26 when PTK members solicited assistance from Midland College employees and students. When we ask our fellow students and Midland College employees for donations, the response was overwhelming, Gonzalez said. Individuals, both students and employees, contributed. A dual-credit English class taught by Felicia Stovall joined us by making this their class project, and the Student Nurses Association contributed with many items as well. In addition to over 30 bags of items, we also donated $767 for the Crisis Center clients. Gonzalez then worked with Lori Dunman, the executive director of the center, to schedule a time to deliver all of the items. Gonzalez stated that during PTK's research, members discovered that the Crisis Center of West Texas currently houses approximately 50 adults and children who are survivors of domestic violence and sexual abuse. They also maintain a 24-hour hotline, free counseling, case management, and legal advocacy. In 2021, there were 204 Texans killed by their intimate partners, and five of those were in the Permian Basin, Gonzalez explained. People our age, 14 to 25, are the highest at risk for interpersonal violence. At the same time that Gonzalez was leading the drive for the Crisis Center, she also organized a Thanksgiving meal for a fellow MC student who is a disabled military veteran with three children. She developed the list of items needed for a complete Thanksgiving meal and made the pitch to PTK members. She then led the efforts to provide not only the meal, but also toys for the children. This spring, Gonzalez organized PTK members to educate local junior high students about going to college and researching scholarships and other sources of tuition assistance. I have thoroughly enjoyed being a member of PTK, Gonzalez said. I had no previous leadership experience, but through PTK, I feel that I have gained invaluable leadership abilities. It's also given me a sense of community and taught me about valuing others' opinions and how to work with people at various stages of life. The members are different ages and ethnicities, but we all can come together to work toward a common goal of service. I admire Maria's enthusiasm and ability to take initiative and lead with a sense of purpose, Dr. Terry Gilmore, MC Government Professor and Honors Program Director, said. She is articulate, poised, and caring. It is a privilege to know this young woman. Gonzalez is also a member of the MC Chemistry Club and has conducted research with MC Chemistry Professor Dr. Pat Kesavan. to synthesize silver nanoparticles for the possibility of delivering chemotherapy directly into tumor sites. Gonzalez gave a presentation on this project at a conference earlier this spring. Odessa Christian to host Community Showcase by Odessa American May 9, 2023. To raise awareness and enrollment, Odessa Christian School will host a community showcase starting at 6 p.m. May 18th at the campus at 200 Dorian Drive. All the teachers will be in their rooms. Hopefully, there will be current students and parents with them to talk about our curriculum and our day and what our school looks like, what our mission is, Principal Pam Walker said. We'll have a former parent speak and a former high school student speak about how OCS prepared her to go on to school. Odessa Collegiate Academy Principal James Ramage also will speak. The school also will be collecting non-perishable food items to donate to the Wrangler Pantry at Odessa College. We'll have some high school kids here to go to OCA. We'll be talking to parents about their experiences here and how it prepared them for high school, Walker said. Odessa's Got Talent, May 9, 2023. Odessa's Got Talent will be returning this summer. The event, which serves as a fundraiser for the Permian Basin Mission Center, is scheduled 7:30 p.m. June 17th at the Ector Theater. Virtual auditions for the talent show are open until May 15th. Contestants can upload their videos less than 50 megabytes or YouTube link to tinyurl.com/29x75crh. The finalist will compete live on stage at the Ector Theater on the day of the event for a prize pool of $9,000. For more information about Odessa's Got Talent or the Permian Basin Mission Center, go to tinyurl.com/2CEM6VTJ. This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for Tuesday, May the 9th, 2023. Start mammograms at 40, not 50, a U.S. health panel recommends, by Associated Press, May 9, 2023. Washington. Women should start getting every other year mammograms at age 40 instead of waiting until 50, according to a draft recommendation from a federal task force. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force has long said women can choose to start breast cancer screening as young as 40, with a stronger recommendation that they get the X-ray exams every 2 years from age 50 through 74. Tuesday's update, if the draft proposal is finalized, would mark a shift in the influential panel's guidelines, although it is not likely to end confusion. Other health groups differ over when and how often to screen. This new recommendation will help save lives and prevent more women from dying due to breast cancer, said former task force chair Dr. Carol Mangione. The task force noted that black women are 40% more likely to die of breast cancer than white women, making mammograms at 40 an especially important step, but also urged more research to better understand and combat the disparity. The task force also noted that nearly half of all women have dense breasts, which means mammograms may not work as well, called for more research into whether additional types of testing would help. The draft recommendation applies to women at average risk of breast cancer, but not those at very high risk due to certain genetic or other factors. It is open for public comment through June 5th, after which the task force will decide whether to finalize it. While cancer deaths have been declining for years, breast cancer remains the second leading cancer killer of U.S. women behind lung cancer. Health organizations have long had different screening recommendations seeking to balance catching breast cancer early while avoiding too many false alarms when the X-rays spot non-cancerous blips. The American Cancer Society says women ages 45 to 54 should get mammograms every year, but can choose to start at 40 and then at 55, can choose to switch to every other year. The American College of Radiology recommends annual mammograms starting at 40 for women at average risk of breast cancer, but urges that young women get assessed for risk factors that require even earlier screening. Teacher placed on administrative leave, by Odessa American for May 9, 2023. Following an allegation of a teacher spanking a child at Ireland Elementary School, Ector County ISD police and administration are investigating. The alleged incident occurred May 5th. Chief Communications Officer Mike Adkins said the teacher was placed on paid administration leave while the investigation is ongoing.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, May 6th. Firebird Energy founders startup Firebird Energy 2. The story was written by Mella McEwen. After successfully building Midland Basin-focused Firebird Energy and selling it to Diamondback Energy, Firebird's management team decided they weren't ready to sit back and enjoy their spoils. Quote, "Overall, we wanted to build on the momentum we had with Firebird 1, Travis Thompson, chief executive officer and co-founder of the new Firebird Energy 2, told the Reporter-Telegram. The Fort Worth-based company has secured equity commitments in excess of $500 million, anchored by funds managed by Quantum Energy Partners. The founders and employees of Firebird 2, along with other strategic partners, are making significant equity commitments as well. Quote, "We plan to lease, buy, drill, and operate this year," Thompson said. "We are building Firebird 2 for the long term. Our vision is to take this large commitment and turn it into a large-scale operation," end quote. Firebird 1 was sold to Diamondback for $1.6 billion in November 2022, offering Diamondback approximately 75,000 gross, 68,000 net acres, and 353 estimated gross, 316 net horizontal locations on primary development targets. Estimated production for 2023 is about 19,000 barrels of oil per day, or 25,000 barrels of oil equivalent. Quote, "You will see Firebird 2 doing many of the things we did at Firebird 1, he said. "The company will continue its focus on the Midland Basin, but will look at anything, even the Delaware Basin, if the right opportunity presents itself," Thompson said. "We definitely take the never-say-never approach," he said. Firebird's team will continue its strategy of acquiring and developing assets through the drill bit and through acquisitions. Quote, "There have been opportunities in the Permian Basin since the Santa Rita No. 1, and we believe the basin is as dynamic as ever," Thompson said. "We are looking at deals ranging in size from a section or less to tens of thousands of acres," end quote. "One of the biggest challenges is volatile commodity prices and how the gap between what buyers are willing to pay and what sellers are willing to accept affects the acquisition and divestiture market." But Thompson said the company's great relationships with others in the Permian should help meet the challenge. Just as the new iteration of Firebird will continue its focus on acquiring and developing assets in the Midland Basin, he said it will adapt to the changing ESG, environment, social, and governance landscape. Quote, "We have always tried to operate at the highest standards of excellence in all regards," he said. "That has allowed us to adapt to the changing ESG landscape and be great stewards of the assets we own. We are a fiscally conservative company, which has allowed us to weather the storms, whether that's a product of the economy or a global pandemic."
This is the Dear Abby column. Revelations of sexual abuse sow shock and uncertainty. Dear Abby, I recently was told that my late father-in-law was a serial child abuser who molested his daughter and at least two of his grandchildren. My husband loved and deeply respected his parents. Should I tell my husband this information? Should I ask my grown son if he was also molested as his cousins were? I don't want to rock the boat, but I want to do what is best for my son, and I'm not used to keeping things from my husband. Signed, Wish I Didn't Know. Dear Wish, who gave you this information and why? Was it a credible source? Were your late father-in-law's alleged crimes reported to the authorities? If you trust your source, by all means, talk to your son and ask if his grandfather ever did anything that made him uncomfortable. Why would you keep this from your husband? Tell him what you were told and by whom. Dear Abby, my brother Gene passed away a few months ago. He had been in and out of the hospital for most of 2022. He had four children, and while he wasn't close to them, he tried to have a relationship with them. One child lived in the same town, but wanted nothing to do with him. When they found out Gene was dying, they all wanted to know what they were getting. Gene's last wish was that they not be informed about his death. I felt I owed it to him to honor his wishes. Prior to his passing, his oldest child was saying what a horrible father he was. Now my brother is gone, and she's mad she, quote, didn't get to grieve, unquote, and posting nasty things about me on social media. I won't stoop to her level and respond. Gene quit talking to all of them 4 months before his death. Was I wrong for not telling them? Signed, Honoring My Brother. Dear Honoring, no, you were not wrong. You honored your brother's wishes. It is sad that his children didn't have a chance to mend fences with their father before his passing, but they will have the rest of their lives to grieve. If you can call frustration over not inheriting anything, grieving. Dear Abby, I'm bipolar, and my best friend forever is in her third physically abusive relationship. After he moved in with her, I told her I had to end the friendship, because he also has mental health issues and carries a gun. I'm afraid for her safety. Because I survived and left my own abuser, I take my safety seriously. Another friend says I should be there for her. I did tell her police officer granddaughter about the abuse. Should I stay or should I go? Signed, Friendship Challenge in Virginia. Dear Friendship Challenge, do not allow anyone to guilt you into putting yourself into a dangerous situation. Assure your friend that once this risky romance ends, if she's still in one piece, you will be there for her. You did the right thing by alerting your friend's granddaughter that her grandmother might be in danger. The woman may need counseling, so she won't continue getting into abusive relationships. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.